well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad to be with you on the program today. We're going to be heading up north, northeast, I guess, to the state of Maine, where a red flag law will be, or at least a red flag proposal, will be going before voters this November. And we've talked about this before with both at Bearing Arms and here on the podcast, the outrageous lengths that the Democrats and the state legislature have gone to avoid any attempt for the public to weigh in beforehand. So state law requires that a public hearing be held on ballot initiatives. And the Democrats in the legislature said, no, because the Constitution doesn't say anything about that. This state law is in conflict with the state Constitution. And they tried to use that as an argument to not hold a public hearing. Eventually, the public pressure got to them and they agreed to hold a public hearing with a little more than 24 hours notice. I mean, it was nonsense. But gun owners still turned out in large numbers to oppose this. Spokesperson for the governor's office showed up in opposition to testify against the red flag referendum. You had folks from the state police there to testify against this red flag referendum. So the hearing was held, but there's also another option in Maine law. A competing measure can be placed on the ballot, giving voters a choice, not just between the status quo and, you know, a new gun control law, but another option, another alternative. And in this case, the competing measure would have, well, you're going to hear from the author of this competing measure here in a moment, but it would have addressed mental health, which is something that the red flag law simply doesn't do. Would have not just improved Maine's quote unquote yellow flag law, which is much better than a red flag statute, and we'll get into that with our conversation too, would have helped law enforcement. It would have done a lot of good things for the state of Maine. Voters aren't going to get a chance to vote on that competing measure because Democrats have stymied efforts to put it on the ballot. Representative Jennifer Poirier is the author of this competing measure, and I had the chance to sit down and talk with her this morning about the red flag referendum, the final days of this year's legislative session, and how folks in Maine, not just gun owners in Maine, but how folks in Maine can reject this red flag language and push for improved access to mental health, the things that would have been contained in this competing measure. Take a look and a listen. Representative Poirier, thank you so much for coming on the program. It is really good to meet you, and I appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So, first things first, the regular session is over and wrapped up with, right?
It is, as of yesterday at about 5:30.
Okay. So did the Senate Judiciary Committee take any action whatsoever on your competing measure to put this on the ballot in November?
Not at all. Actually, Speaker Fecteau blocked that measure, which he had made it clear to me on Sunday through a phone call that he had no intentions of allowing the work session to occur in the Judiciary Committee, nor to allow it to hit the floor or be on the ballot. So he followed through with that, which I believe is against House rules, but they have a habit of breaking those rules.
Yeah, we'll get into that in just a little bit, because I got to tell you, I mean, this whole process has been absolutely insane. For folks who have not been following along, Maine has a yellow flag law in place. A group of anti-gun activists and Democrat lawmakers want to replace this with a red flag law. Didn't want to vote on it themselves, apparently, right? So they threw this out to the voters via referendum. State law requires that a public hearing be held. They hemmed and hawed. Oh, we don't have to do that because the Constitution doesn't say anything about it. I finally, even when some red flag supporters were saying, listen, you guys are breaking the law, you've got to do this, this looks terrible, they agreed to a public hearing with a little more than 24 hours notice, right? Middle of the week. So, you know, gun owners were forced to scramble. Now, gun owners showed up in mass to testify against this proposal. But there is also, again, the option to put a competing measure on the ballot alongside this referendum. And this is something that you've been working on.
Correct. With a lot of support from a lot of other entities, the competing measure was crafted by myself, David Trahan of Sportsmen's Alliance of Maine, in great collaboration with the Maine Public Safety Department, Maine State Police, with NAMI, which is National Association of Mental Illness, and also the Chief Executive's Office. So there was a lot of support for enhancing our yellow flag law and creating this competing measure that really stresses mental health and safety of all.
Okay, so what specifically does this, I'd like to call it a potential alternative, but it sounds like this is not going to be on the ballot this November. What would the competing measure have done specifically?
The competing measure would reinstate, we have what's called crisis receiving centers in Maine. So whether it's through somebody being yellow flagged or somebody just in crisis, we have four centers in our state that take in people for up to 23 hours at a time. There are certified mental health specialists there as well as peer support people so that people have a place to go. Right now, there are in Portland and Lewiston. There's one in Kennebec County and one in Aroostook County. But the current budget is removing the options for funding in Kennebec County and Aroostook County. The competing measure reinstates the funding for those and also sets up five other options for mental health. Which when we're talking about red flag, yellow flag, any of this, mental health is huge. Obviously, if somebody's in crisis and you're considering taking their firearms away, there's some kind of mental health issue going on, whether it's a finite amount of time in a crisis situation or a much broader issue. We believe that the mental health aspect is extremely important to get somebody help and not just take away their firearms. The competing measure also supports law enforcement by helping them create storage spaces that can handle the capacity, the volume of firearms they might be taking. Yellow flag's been used over 900 times since the tragedy in Lewiston. So you can see the volume of firearms that they may have to hang on to. Mm. And Maine's a very rural state. So there are a lot of small departments that just don't have the resources to follow through with everything they need to keep everybody safe. So this competing measure would have actually allowed them more capability of doing so. We actually worked with Senator Susan Collins' office as well and found that a lot of the cost associated with the competing measure could be covered by federal grants. So it wasn't going to be just on the backs of taxpayers, but you know, it's an extreme collaborative effort just to make things better without going to the extreme red flag alternative.
And again, this is what the Democrats have blocked, right? This is what they don't want voters to have the option to choose this November, right? Is either stick with the status quo, or adopt this red flag law. And you know, I want to go back to something you talked about the mental health component here. This is one of the reasons why I'm so vociferously opposed to red flag laws, because they have nothing to do with mental health. I live in Virginia. We have a red flag law in this state. It's up to a judge to decide whether somebody poses a danger to themselves or others. There's no mental health evaluation beforehand. There's no requirement for mental health help after someone's deemed to be dangerous, right? They just take the guns away and then they consider the problem to be solved. Well, if someone is dangerous, taking their guns away and leaving them access to knives, pills, rope, gasoline, matches, whatever, doesn't address the problem. I confess that, you know, I'm not a huge fan of yellow flag laws either, but I will say that in Maine, there is more due process. There is mental health component at the outset, right? So it's not just a judge, but it is actually a mental health professional who's talking to somebody and determining, okay, is this person really a risk to themselves or others? You know, with law enforcement being the only entity that can file these orders, it really cuts down on the potential for abuse. So you don't have, you know, somebody red flagging an ex-girlfriend or, you know, a family member that they're upset with. That I think largely takes away that component. So, you know, if we have to have some form or fashion of these statutes in place, what Maine has done with its yellow flag law, I think it's better. It's far better than these red flag statutes. And the improvements that you talked about, adding access, continuing to have access in rural parts of Maine, again, Representative, that's so critically important. I live in rural Virginia, and I can tell you, my wife passed away 6 months ago. Just trying to find counselors for my kids to help them process their grief has been a nightmare because there just aren't a lot of therapists around. There aren't a lot of counselors. There's not a lot of help. And I know that that's the case throughout much of rural America. I'm sure that's the case in rural Maine, too. So if I understand correctly, these centers in, you said, Kennebec County and Aroostook County, are they going to close?
It's my understanding that without the funding, they will have to close. And when you look at the map of Maine, you'll see how spread out we are.
Yeah.
Lewiston and Portland are in southern Maine. So that leaves, you know, all of northern and central Maine without access, without having to travel for hours to get somewhere. So that actually ties the hands of law enforcement when they're trying to implement Yellow Flag as well. Thankfully, we do have some remote options. But when you're talking about closing centers, that means you're going to have less people available to, you know, process those orders and evaluate people as well. So you'll have people waiting for hours, you know, and then it's just an awful situation all around to think that they don't think it's important enough to keep those centers open in one hand. But I mean, overall, I think you know as well as I do, the gun control lobby doesn't care about mental health. They just want to get firearms out of people's hands. When I believe that the majority of Mainers, if you talk to them, they want to see that focus on mental health, because it's not the gun that kills somebody. It's the person that needs help to get through whatever issues they're going through.
So between now and November, I mean, it sounds to me like there's going to have to be some education done for voters here to let them know, okay, here's what the red flag statute would do. Here's what it wouldn't do, right? But here's another option. Even if it's not going to be on the ballot, if they reject this red flag referendum, will you bring this competing measure forward as legislation next year?
That's a very good question. And actually, right after we adjourned yesterday, I did take the language to the reviser's office with the intent of having that go to our next session, which starts in January. It does face more hurdles. It has to be approved by legislative council to be able to make it to committee. But I think that the education process, like you mentioned, is very important. And David Trahan from Sportsman's Alliance of Maine and myself are already planning many education seminars throughout the summer to educate people on red flag versus yellow flag and what our measure would do so that we can garner even more support than we've already had. It's definitely not over yet. We want to make sure people know they can vote no on red flag and still have an option in the near future.
Absolutely. Yeah. Even if it's not on the ballot, again, voting no opens the door to what we just talked about. And I confess, I don't follow Maine politics all that closely. I do remember the referendum a few years ago, more than a few years ago now, that would have established, I think this was the waiting period referendum, right? That was voted down, 52-48, I believe it was. Michael Bloomberg came in, spent a lot of money, going to pass gun control via referendum. That didn't work out too well. I'm curious just to get your thoughts on where you think things stand with this red flag referendum. I mean, the process by which this got on the ballot, again, the bizarre argument from Democrats that they didn't have to hold a public hearing even though state law required it because, well, the state constitution doesn't say anything about it. It seems to me like not only should you be upset about the policy that they want to put in place, but you should be upset about how they've gone about trying to put this policy in place. Do you think Mainers are aware of this? Is there growing opposition to this referendum, not just because of what it says, but how it got on the ballot in the first place?
I think a lot more Mainers have become more aware in the last weeks as they've seen this played out. I've had many people contact me just completely disgusted with the way the process was manipulated. But I also think you hit the nail on the head when you mentioned Bloomberg. Obviously, Red Flag is their initiative. They're the ones that brought it to Maine, paid people to go out and get signatures, that sort of thing. So we definitely have a battle here that we have to fight against. But honestly, we have truth on our side. We have grassroots on our side. And Maine's proven before with other initiatives that we can beat big money. by doing the right thing. So we fully intend to press forward with this and make people aware because, you know, honestly, lives are on the line here. We've seen in other states with red flag that either citizens or police officers don't come out of the situation alive in some circumstances. And I've been a strong advocate for law enforcement officers in my full 5 years in the legislature. And that's very important to me and also the public safety aspect. Nobody should have to lose their lives to get help.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I know that obviously the impetus for this push for a red flag was the shooting in Lewiston. I've talked with David before on this program. I've read the investigative reports. There were opportunities to use the existing laws on the books to take this individual into custody, to have that mental health assessment, to not just take his firearms away, but again, to get him the mental health treatment that he so desperately and obviously needed. We saw this, you know, even a couple months before the attack when he was, you know, put into a psychiatric facility in West Point, New York. But he was released. And again, there were a lot of, I think, a lot of balls that were dropped, a lot of missed opportunities. But you those failures. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you bring up a good point that I also want to mention with our competing measure. Mm-hmm. When you mentioned the incident in Lewiston, Mr. Card's son had actually gone to a school resource officer prior to all of this with a concern that perhaps his dad might shoot up a school. So another thing that we've created in this bill is training for school resource officers and security personnel at school so they can know the process, and actually it creates a process for them to report to, you know, the police department or a district attorney. In the case of Robert Card, the resource officer reached out to a friend and nothing happened after that. So this establishes that they have the same sort of training in yellow flag that a police officer would, and they have somebody to report to ensure that something like this doesn't happen again.
Well, Representative, again, I cannot thank you enough for your work and your activism. You know, even beyond the Second Amendment issue, I am a big proponent of mental health access, and it sounds like your competing measure would actually do that, as opposed to this red flag referendum, which again doesn't touch mental health and would lead to a reduction, frankly, in mental health access in the state of Maine. So, thank you for fighting the good fight. Can we have you back on the show between now and November?
Anytime.
Okay. Excellent. Well, listen, you enjoy a day without session. try to stay cool, and we will definitely stay in touch.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I do want to thank the representative for joining us on the program. And, you know, this is an issue that I'm very passionate about because, you know, we've talked with folks like Mike Cedini from Walk the Talk America. Obviously, our friend Sarah at Hold My Guns. We talked with, you know, folks from the Wisconsin Gun Store Project. I am a big believer. I don't want to shy away from talking about mental health and gun ownership. I think that's the wrong thing to do. I'm a big believer in, you know, talking it out. I think I've talked about this on the program before. After my wife, Missy, died, I went to go see a grief counselor myself. We're coming up on the 6-month anniversary. I've actually gone back to see a grief counselor. I think it's really important that we have access. And living, again, in a rural part of the country, I know, you know, we hear talk about, like, in New York City, the food deserts, right, that New York's new, likely new socialist mayor wants to, you know, combat by having city-owned grocery stores. I mean, listen, all across the country, you've got a mental health desert. And it's not just related to rural areas. Even in large cities, you've got more need than you can be addressed by the existing resources. But it is particularly difficult in rural America to get access to mental health. Telemedicine has been a big improvement. That's actually what we ended up relying on for my kids after Missy passed away, because it was that was an easier option. But, you know, that's not going to work for everybody. Having that in-person conversation, that back and forth, I think probably works better than trying to do all of that therapy online. Not to say that, you know, it's not a good backup option or a decent alternative, but I think it is a backup option. So the fact that Democrats are actively working to shut down access to mental health for folks, particularly in crisis in rural parts of Maine, do not want to have this competing measure on the ballot that would restore or at least keep in place this access in rural Maine. It's disgusting. Because again, there is no mental health component whatsoever to that red flag law. None. Not on the front end, not on the back end. Once a person's guns have been taken from them, problem solved. Doesn't matter if they can illegally access a firearm. Doesn't matter if they could run somebody down in a truck. Doesn't matter if they could, you know, self-harm using other objects that are there in their house. None of that matters to red flag supporters. As long as a gun wasn't used, that's a win. I don't think that's how most of us think. You know, one of the statistics I've seen about red flag laws is that for every 16 to 17 extreme risk protection orders that are issued, one suicide is prevented. For every 16 or 17 petitions that are issued, one suicide is prevented. So what about in those other 15 to 16 cases? Were the individuals not a threat to themselves in the first place? In which case, why were their guns taken? Or did the red flag law fail to stop them from taking their own life? In which case, red flag laws are an abysmal failure. You pick. Maybe it's a combination of the two. But again, not a great track record. There are far better ways to address individuals who are in crisis, get them the help that they need, without the blatant abuses of due process and our Second Amendment rights that take place under red flag laws. That's it. All right, let's move on to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a story out of California. Here's the headline. Gun jams an attack on teen in El Cajon. Four suspects in custody, and the vast majority of those four suspects in custody are already known to law enforcement, as it turns out. The Times of San Diego reporting that this was at an El Cajon mall on Wednesday. One of the suspects allegedly tried to fire a shot at the victim's head, but failed because the pistol that he had jammed. The four suspects then fled the store. The alleged attack on the 17-year-old took place at what's described as a clothing and novelty shop at the Parkway Plaza Shopping Center. This was actually, a Tuesday afternoon. But the four individuals taken into custody, and were behind bars as of Wednesday afternoon. While they were searching a few blocks from the El Cajon Mall, police officers located the suspects, identified as 18-year-olds Abraham Jesus Rodriguez and Jermaine David Taylor, 24-year-old Isidro Vasquez, and a 16-year-old boy whose name was withheld because he is a minor. According to the Times of San Diego, three of the suspects ran into a nearby apartment complex. The fourth was found at a nearby business. The juvenile was detained after leaving an apartment. Officers found two handguns during a search of the underage suspect's apartment. One of the guns matched the description of the gun that was used in the assault and was found jammed with a round in the chamber there. Suspects booked into the San Diego County Jail and Juvenile Hall on suspicion of conspiracy, attempted murder, and firearm offenses. And according to police, at the time of the arrests, Vasquez, the 24-year-old, and the minor were on probation for, quote, gun-related crimes. So all of California's gun control laws apparently did nothing to stop these individuals, including a minor, from illegally acquiring a firearm. Not once, but twice, right? Nor, by the way, did California's soft-on-crime policies do anything to keep these offenders behind bars. Instead, slap on the wrist, probation given, no lessons learned whatsoever. On to today's Armed Citizen story from the Second City of Chicago, where a concealed carry holder shot at an armed robber who was assaulting a woman, according to police. This happened in the 1100 block of West Hubbard Street in the West Loop neighborhood. It was Tuesday morning, a 38-year-old woman outside about 8:45 in the morning, but she was approached by two men who were armed, according to police. The woman in question was accosted by the two guys. They demanded her belongings. They ended up hitting her on the head and robbing her. About that same time, a 41-year-old man, licensed gun owner, has a concealed carry license, saw what was going on, confronted the robbers. They then pointed their guns at him. That's when he fired at the robbers. No one was hit. But the offenders did flee the area, so they stopped the assault on the woman, did not try to continue their assault on the armed bystander. Nobody in custody, unfortunately. The woman, thankfully, was, I guess, not seriously injured. She declined medical attention. No other injuries reported. But in the right place at the right time and able to help a woman in need, that armed citizen there in the Windy City of Chicago. And finally today, speaking of in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, a passerby, actually a driver, I guess, in Wichita, Kansas, who saw a food truck go up in flames as it was driving down the road and alerted the drivers to the danger. Now, unfortunately, the food truck, Ken and Barbie's Rolling Diner, could not be saved. It was fully engulfed. But the owners of the food truck are okay. Barbie Tabor, Kelly Ake, say they only stopped because that Good Samaritan flagged him down. Tabor said, "I was trying to rip the fire extinguisher off the wall, and I finally got it unbuckled. Flames are blowing right at me, and I just ran because I didn't know what to do." Aki said, "We've got repeat customers. We know people by name. Sometimes we know their orders before they come up to the window. They've been active in business since 2017. The truck has been their sole source of income for the past 6 years. And again, you know, their life was saved thanks to that Good Samaritan. But that's not the only good deed that's being performed here. As a KSN reports, less than 24 hours after the fire, they are inundated. They say they're getting overwhelming support from the community. Fellow food truck drivers offering help and resources. Customers and fans of the truck are, you know, offering to make donations. What can we do to help you get back on the feet? They won't be making their scheduled events this weekend, but it looks like because of the support they're receiving from the community, and thankfully, again, because of the quick thinking and the fast action of the Good Samaritan alerted to the fact that their vehicle was on fire, they will be back on their feet, and they will be back in business before long. So again, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, not only that Good Samaritan, but the good people in Wichita helping out the owners of Ken and Barbie's Rolling Diner. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program as always. Hope you have a great rest of your week and a good weekend. Looking forward to being back with you on Monday. Between now and then, though, be sure to check out BearingArms.com. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from across the nation. As I record this on Thursday morning, we are still waiting to see what the Senate parliamentarian will do with the Senate Finance Committee's language. Removing the taxes and registration for suppressors, short-barreled firearms, any other weapons. Thought we were going to get that language last night, but hopefully we'll get it sometime today, and hopefully it'll be good news from the parliamentarian. But we will have the latest for you on that. Lawsuits, legislation, culture war fights, all of it waiting for you there at BearingArms.com. And if you like what you see, I'd encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member and support the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing. We certainly do appreciate that support. All right, everybody. Have a great weekend. We'll see you back here on Monday. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.